morning. I'd like to call to order the February 13th regular meeting of the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Chris, you want to...
Mr. Anderson?
Here.
Ms. Blair? Not here. Ms. Cantu?
Here.
Dr. Olson?
Here.
Mr. Strawn?
Here.
Ms. Warren?
Here.
Dr. Barbanel?
Here. First item of business is public forum. Any member of the public may address the board for order of 3 minutes. Since this is very short, I think it would be a little less precise. On items that are not on the agenda, agenda items will have another opportunity for everyone to speak on that item. Is there any, do we have any cards? Oh, okay.
Michael Welch.
I apologize if I'm speaking on a matter that's going to be covered in the executive officer's board reports. But I thought it would be important to make note of the remembrance of an absolute titan of our industry. Last January 4th, former assemblyman, former state senator, and former Judge Gordon Plum passed away at age 94. You will, of course, recognize him as the author of the Port Plum Act, which was an absolute pioneering legislative effort. Recall, this is a time before EPA existed. There was no federal regulation for water pollution control that had any teeth in it at all. Senator Plum, as chairman of the Water Resources Committee in the Senate, along with Carly Porter, who was the chair of the House Water Committee, came up with a bipartisan bill that established the world's first process for regulating water quality. They came up with the concept of regional assessments of beneficial uses, establishing water quality objectives to protect those beneficial uses, a permit process for regulating discharges to waters, authorities to the regional and state boards for monitoring and assessing water quality problems, and most importantly, enforcement teeth to ensure that compliance occurs. Again, this was absolute landmark legislation. Additionally, Senator Plum, many people don't recognize this, but he also authored the legislation that funded the completion of the state water project. He was a very, very important man. We'll also remember him as a real friend to the San Diego Water Board. Parents aren't supposed to have favorites among their kids. It was very clear that Judge Colon had a favorite among the water boards, and that was the San Diego Water Board. He was close personal friends with three of the executive officers who served in the 1960s, 70s, and early 80s when the Port Plum Act was implemented. He could always be counted on to make phone calls to Sacramento if the executive officer or assistant executive officer ran into any bureaucratic snafus. I'm sure that's something that today would have been very, very welcome. As a young engineer, I was fortunate to meet him. He was personal friends with three of my professional mentors. I found him to be a man of extreme intelligence, capable of taking either side of an argument and debate and winning, and doing it in a way where he's made a friend in you by the time he's defeated you in the argument. You can see why he was so successful in an era where one party controlled the Senate and another controlled the Assembly. After retiring as a judge, he took on a strong role as a water advocate, working for water reuse, working for local supply development. He always stressed the importance of regions in the Water Quality Control Act. The importance of regional experts making regional decisions, identifying regional priorities, and assigning resources to solve those priorities. I didn't get a chance to talk to Judge Colon in the last few years of his life after he had developed practical vision, but I think this is a document he would have absolutely loved because it implemented all of the major elements that he constantly preached on in developing the Port Plum Act. So we'll miss him. He's a great friend of this regional board. Again, an absolute titan of our industry.
Thank you. Thank you very much. An item you didn't mention that always impressed me about Port Plum Act
Judge Palum had very strong opinions. Incidentally, the Port of Clonak served as the model for Clean Water Act, which was a federal model. He had some very strong opinions about how the Port of Clonak was implemented. And again, he stressed the importance of regional autonomy. He preached against the use of one-size-fits-all national or state standards, and that's one of the reasons he indicated that the importance of the regional boards, establishing regional experts with regional priorities and using the very limited resources the regional boards have available to address those priorities. So again, great man.
Adoption of the October 10th, 2018 and December 12th board meeting minutes. I want to have a motion to adopt those minutes.
Second.
I think you can't do the October one because you...
Well, that's right. We're
but you can do the December one.
That's correct. Which is why we have October today. Because I couldn't move on it. I couldn't vote on the last one.
You can actually vote on, even if you weren't there, if you've reviewed them. You can or you can abstain.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay. We have a motion. I think I heard a second. All in favor? Oh, no. Oh, I'm sorry. Chris?
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Cantu?
Aye.
Dr. Wilson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Ms. Warren?
Aye.
Dr. Barbanel?
Aye. Okay. Item number two is the opportunity for the board members, State Board Liaison, who couldn't be here, and then the Executive Officer report to discuss items that have occurred since the last board meeting, which was 2 months ago, that are of interest to the public, to other board members. Here, I think you have something I seem to remember. I forgot what it was exactly.
Just information. I got contacted by Professor Biggs at San Diego State. They're going to be having their San Diego State University Water Days on the 23rd of April. He invited us to come with limited seating, but I asked him if we could have 4 seats, thinking a couple of board members and a couple of people from staff. They're going to be talking about a number of subjects. Just the workshop objectives are identify research priorities and key big ideas for water management in San Diego County and the Board of Region, and develop valuable partnerships between San Diego State University, industry, government, and identify proposals for the San Diego State Mission Valley campus, which seems to be the center part of their concerns right now. But I just thought I'd throw that out. I'll pass this down for the board membership. Look at. I'm going to try to go. So if you're interested, let me know and I'll get back to the professor and kind of give my head count. If I need to ask for more seats, I'll be happy to do that.
Catherine, what are the limits to the number of board members who can go? Is it 4 or 3?
3.
What happens if 5 people want to go?
Could notice it as a public meeting of board, and that as long as you do it in 10 days, okay. With 10 days notice.
The jury could get 4 or 5 or more, and most of whatever bad happens. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You know, there's just Google San Diego Water State Water Days.
A group of us several Fridays ago met upon invitation of UC San Diego's Mexican U.S. Alliance, and Dave and I attended along with about 40 people to review what was happening in the Tijuana River watershed going on through the Tecate River watershed, which flows together. We had about 50-50 of people from both sides of the border. It was fascinating for me to get an update of great improvements and investments that are being done in, starting with the Tecate River watershed, that go far to prevent sedimentation and some other water quality issues. There's a lot more work that needs to be done, and overall, part of this discussion is a full day discussion, including lunch with presentations, was with further coordination, we could do so much more. And there was a real commitment to do that. I was impressed that the group from both sides of the border were many of the people who had come together 20 years ago when I was involved. So there's a lot of continuous energy there, and there's a great feeling of reinvigoration. So I'm very thrilled to report that. I wish Dave was here that he'd be able to share his take on it too, but I think he learned a lot and enjoyed it as well. Growing out of that is another meeting that's going to happen at the IVWC Wastewater Sewer Treatment Plant. There is a group in California called the Water Solutions Network, which is an opportunity to bring 24 water and water-related professionals together from different sectors to teach them specific soft skills, how to negotiate, how to collaborate, how to resolve conflicts. It's an 8-month program. And their first meeting will be at IVWC's Wastewater Sewer Treatment Plant to do a logic study of that plant. And so we're bringing together experts from both sides of the border again to be able to present to this group of 24 professionals the logic behind that. I think this is going to be meaningful because it allows for a better statewide understanding of what's going on here. And I think that will help us build on that energy when we need to make policy decisions that help both sides of the border on the Tijuana watershed. Thank you.
I had one item just to say about the San Juan Basin watershed, and that they have completed their render removal, and they ran into some difficulties with the school district, but were able to negotiate those. I'm concerned about the pesticides used and the quantities, but they were successful, so hopefully there's going to be more water in the basin.
Okay, I have pie over two items. The first item has to do with the status of our modern monitoring effort. And since Dave is ill and out, I've asked Sarah Mann, who's the staff person who's really doing all the work and organizing, to give us a brief presentation of where we stand.
Hi, good morning, Vice Chair Barbanel, members of the board. My name is Sarah Muron. I'm an engineering geologist with the Site Restoration Unit, and I've been attempting to shepherd along our modern monitoring project for the last year and a half or so. I'm going to give you a little update on the various tasks we've been working on. I also just wanted to do a brief overview of what this project is. An interregional effort led by Region 9 but involving three other regions. And our main focus is to pilot test modern monitoring tools and technologies to use in our agency work. And when I say modern monitoring tools, the main technologies that I'm referring to at this point are remote sensing tools like satellite data, satellite imagery, drone imagery, CCTV, video streams, as well as aerial imagery from airplanes. And the time frame for this project is estimated to be about 3 to 5 years for startup, pilot tests, obtaining funding, and looking at results in the next regional collaboration with these different regions. So that involves screening technologies, determining what kind of pilot tests we could do, what kind of partners we could work with, and also brainstorming on funding sources and that sort of thing. So that's ongoing. We've also been looking into collaborating with students, professors, research groups, whatnot, at local universities, and that's in progress as well. The third thing on the list here is looking at data models, and that specifically involves satellite data. We have a couple things going on there. I'll mention the second one first, which is folks in water rights up at the State Board have been in communication with Jet Propulsion Lab folks at NASA, and there's a group there that's focusing on the western part of the U.S. and water issues, and they want to find a way to make the data that they have available more useful to folks such as us, such as the water boards that might be able to get some use out of it. So they're having a meeting estimated, I think, to be in April, where the water boards, I think it's mostly State Water Board, but we've also been invited to go there and convey to them what we do and what kind of data we would need and what kind of imagery would be useful for us. So that's pretty exciting. The other thing that we have going on for satellite data is we've been speaking to a company called Descartes Labs based in New Mexico. They don't have their own satellites, but they have access to satellite data from a number of different companies, and as well as other remote sensing data. And what they do is they build computer models to be able to use that data, crunch that data, and come up with useful solutions for a variety of different clients. They've been talking to a lot of different government organizations, including us. And I have a little demo of to show what type of work that they do. So what they do is they come up with models based on a concept called machine learning, which you might have heard of, which is where they train a computer to identify data patterns. So they have an example here that you can go on where they're using wind turbines. So you can click on the wind turbine, and then they will come to the data sources that they have. And it'll show on the map here where they've identified that same pattern. And then you can scroll down here and see all the different turbines across the U.S. You can click on them and then see where they are. So that's the type of thing that we've been talking to them about. The main focus area so far has been looking at cannabis grows. And that's the test case that they've been using for us. And so they've been developing a proposal, which we should be getting this week or next, on developing a model for cannabis. We've also been talking to them about how to use this data for monitoring compliance with the construction general permit, which is a big program across the state. That one's proving to be a little more challenging because of the resolution and needing to go back at specific times. The thing with satellite data is that expensive, and if you want high resolution, there are issues if you want to go back week after week, and that's going to cost a lot of money. So there's some challenges in there, but the cannabis one seems to work pretty well. They've already kind of done a dummy model on that, and it works pretty well. So we're excited to see what comes out of that very shortly. And then the last one on the list here is, I mentioned the pilot test. So the Region 9 pilot test that we've been working on is to do some construction monitoring during work at the Pure Water plant expansion in North City. And grading is supposed to be starting in April. So the city of San Diego has been very gracious and willing to work with us on this. And they've been talking to their contractor about setting up, I think we're going to get two cameras out there at the site. This is a view of where it is. This is 805 here in Miramar Road, and San Diego is using this technology right now at the West Mission Bay Bridge project. And you can look at this site if you go to the city website for this project. It's live. So this is a live view of the bridge. You can get live video. See it as it's going. They have another file on the left. They've got time lapse data. They've got this one from December. They've got stockpiles and BMPs set up here. So you can see over the course of a day or 24 hours what's going on at the site, see if anything's changing, there's any discharges. And then you can also go in here and there's just a variety of different views. The panoramic one's pretty interesting. You can go in, you can just browse the images, pick your day up here that you want to see in the town, and just go through the images. So they have them at night as well. So I know from Lori Walsh that she's very excited about using this on pure water when it starts up. So that's what I have for our update. I'm really excited about this pilot project that's going to start, and hopefully the other regions as well are going to be working on developing their pilot projects as well. And the work at Cape Heart Labs, I think, is going to be really interesting as well.
Anticipated a lot of my questions with, in terms of the resolution and how we would use this for stormwater. Has any thought been given yet how we might write this into permits in terms of permitting the monitoring and allowing that evidence, if you will, for an enforcement action?
Not specifically, but just generally, we have considered that that might be something that happens later once we get buy-off from the State Water Board to maybe work that into a statewide permit, and then maybe also go to different municipalities and have conversations with them about working that into their local ordinances so that it's not statewide permits. But that's a little bit further down the road, so nothing specific. But I think in terms of working with the City of San Diego, they were keen to work on this, and I think that it's motivating for municipalities such as them to get a heads up problems. So the goal of using something like this with the video, I think, is to catch something when it's happening and to let you know immediately. The point isn't just to have a gotcha and issue a fine. The point is to just prevent a pollution problem from happening. So that's motivating and for them to do a better job of monitoring.
I anticipate that your take on it is correct in terms of dealing with the MS4 equipment needs, for example, but I wonder whether we look out at 5, 10 years and we're dealing with more individual companies that they'll have the same response. Because unless I'm missing something, all of this video is a public record, subject to the public record file. So, keep it. I'm sure you're thinking about this and working with the Office of Chief Counsel as opposed to me. But I do think we should run it in parallel to make sure that all of your good work here can ultimately be used for multitudes of purposes, but that we don't leave that piece of it behind.
Thank you, Gary. So the last item which I want to mention briefly has to do with potential board action on environmental justice. You may remember that this board sponsored an environmental justice symposium almost 2 years ago, and not much has happened since then. A few months ago, when the Attorney General established its environmental justice unit, which I gather is still smallish and seeking how to operate towards their goals in the state. I spoke to my assembly member, Todd Gloria, about perhaps assisting us in communicating issues in Region 9
to that unit and getting their help in initiating action for environmental justice before there was a violation, they need to be ready to talk to us about potential. And I will be bringing the recommendations of our staff to Mr. Gloria on Friday, and I will report to you next month what happens in that. We're not asking them to do anything but to be an initial liaison between the Attorney General's office, which we go to when we have a problem, but to go to them and discuss issues before we have a problem. So, see you next month. Other items? Let's move on. Jimmy, do you want to, are you going to give the Assistant Executive Officer's report?
Yes, I will.
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean that.
Good morning, Board. My name is Jimmy Smith. I'm the Assistant Executive Officer, filling in for Dave today as he is out sick. To my right is Jeremy Haas, who's our Branch Chief Environmental Program Manager, who is serving as the Assistant Executive Officer today. So thank you, Jeremy. First off, are there any questions on the Executive Officer's report for February?
Okay.
All right, I'd like to cover about three items. The first one has to do with personnel. While it's not mentioned in this month's report, we do have a new staff member who is in the audience here today. So I am pleased to announce that Jill Harris has joined our ranks as the new Senior Environmental Scientist Specialist working in the Wetland and Riparian Protection Program. Jill's work will primarily be engaged with permitting and environmental review work for the City of San Diego, water, wastewater, and stormwater infrastructure projects that involve construction and dredging activities in surface water. Jill has a Bachelor of Science degree in Marine Biology and Environmental Studies from Dartmouth College, a Master's degree in Marine and Environmental Affairs from the University of Washington, and a PhD in Marine Biology from the Scripps Institution of Oceanography. Jill has well over a decade of experience working as an environmental scientist examining aquatic ecosystems and human impacts. Jill is listed as the first author or co-author on numerous peer-reviewed scientific publications based on her work both at Scripps and the World Wildlife Fund. Jill also has professional experience leading and directing scientific research, surveys, ecosystem evaluations, field work, and data analysis. So Jill, if you could just stand up and be recognized, and welcome to the board. Second, I'd like to draw your attention to item A2 in the Executive Officer's Report dealing with the San Diego Rivers Watershed Consortium Program. In 2018, Senator Atkins introduced Senate Bill 1367, and after approval by both the legislature and the governor, it requires the San Diego River Conservancy to form three advisory panels. These advisory panels will be dealing with the Otay, Sweetwater, and Tijuana Rivers. The legislation calls for the San Diego Water Board to have a representative on each of those panels. The term would last 2 years, and there would be at least two meetings per year for each of the panels. Initially, Dave thought he would cover the three panels, but we did want to bring it to the board for your opportunity to join. So if you guys would like to join in on one of those panels, please come talk to me, or you could give Julia Richards at the San Diego River Conservancy a call, or I can put you in touch with her, and we can figure out how you can join. There will not be any compensation of a monetary variety. Okay, and finally, I'd like to point out that item A3 is responsive to issues raised this past December during public forum about on-site waste treatment systems in the Temecula Valley wine region. That concludes an action item that came from the December board meeting. So if there's no questions on that, or if there are questions on that, I or the staff are available to expound on the executive officer's report. And if there's no further questions, or if there are any questions, that'll wrap up my report for this month.
Okay, on the second item, Gary, I assume San Diego River
Yeah, I've been doing that, I would continue. It's a little different than these advisory councils. I did talk to Dave about maybe helping with the Sweetwater watershed, because I've done a lot of work in upper part of that. But I'm happy to let Dave be the lead, if I can be of assistance to that, and perhaps participate in some of the meetings. I'll communicate with him on that, but I think, yeah, we've got the San Diego River covered.
And because of your long service, we've asked them to double your salary. And I think, Celeste, you the conversation with me agreed that it would be appropriate if you joined the Tijuana River Park for the same high remuneration.
There was some thought that the Tijuana Advisory Panel could join with the recovery team efforts as well, so to avoid any duplication.
Okay, let's move on to item number three. This is the item on the agenda where members of the board suggest future agenda items for the staff to move forward, not necessarily 2 microseconds from now, but then they have a response in a month or two, three. This way, things that board members find important from their own experience or experience in talking to other people can bring them forward. And many of the items on the agenda come from this item. Are there any items that anybody would like to see come forward? It's in the EO report. There's a list of items that have been accumulated over the last couple of years.
That is correct. It follows the kind of agendas ahead for the next 3 months. So about midway through the report.
Okay, right now I guess everybody is ready for it.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on from item three to item four. Item four and five are on the consent calendar. If anyone from the public or the board wishes to remove an item from the consent calendar, this is the time to do it. And if not, we're allowed to vote on the entire consent calendar. Excuse me, we're allowed to be called on the entire consent calendar. So if we have a motion on the consent calendar, the entire, both.
So moved.
So moved. We have a motion. Motion and a second. Chris?
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Cantu?
Aye.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Ms. Warren?
Aye.
Dr. Barbanel?
Aye. Okay. Now it's just 9:35, which for us is instantaneous. We have two items left. One will be 30 or 40 minutes long plus discussion, and the last item, the last public item, will be the election of chair and vice chair, and then we will go into closed session after that. We will be introduced by the council. So it says that Dave Gibson will present this. I doubt it. So are you up again, Jimmy?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Maybe I can, well, whatever's happening here, I can give a prelude. This is an item that this board introduced a few years ago, and it happens every February, in which the board and the staff have a discussion about what it is that we're actually going to do with the resources that we have as of each February during the coming year. The guiding document, as referred to earlier, is the practical vision, which we adopted 4 or 5 years ago. It seems like it's been there kind of forever. And well as fiscal year.
So, good morning, Vice Chair Barbanel and members of the board. I am pleased to present to you a highlight of some of our accomplishments from the past year and our priorities for 2019. 2018 was our fifth year of implementing our practical vision and our fourth year of using operational planning, which has been quite a help to us. The operational plan guides the intersection of both the practical vision work and our core programmatic functions. Tentative resolution before you, R9-2019-0023, supports the allocation of our resources to implement the practical vision and the operational plan for 2019, which will be our sixth year of operational practical vision implementation. First, I'd like to cover a few highlights from the past year. This is in your agenda package as supporting item, supporting document number one. First off, we did complete cleanup of the boat channel down at Liberty Station. That was quite a long process that was greatly improved by the help of GIACAPI and the Office of Public Participation, who facilitated numerous meetings between the Water Board and the San Diego Navy. Now that that cleanup has been completed, it does clear another hurdle for the eventual transfer of that property to the City of San Diego and additional redevelopment along the waterfront and Liberty Station. Just this past December, this board adopted new waste discharge requirements for the Sycamore Landfill, which is one of the largest in our region. That action extends the life of that landfill until 2046. This board, or through the executive delegation today, did adopt a 401 certification for the City of San Diego's Pure Water Project. You heard a little bit about that from Sarah, and you saw the footprint of where additional facilities will be constructed, and that was what the 401 cert was for, to expand the plant's capabilities and to also for the pipes that will be needed to convey that purified water out to Miramar Reservoir. We've also accepted the last of the two watershed improvement plans, this for the Santa Margarita and the San Juan basins. These now allow the final two sets of COPA entities to focus on the highest water quality problems instead of forcing them to try and take on everything simultaneously. And finally, the board did adopt a climate change readiness resolution this past year, which we will be starting to implement this year. Now, I must stress that these are only a few of some of the things this board accomplished, and your staff behind me have done a lot of heavy lifting and accomplished a lot of good work this year, last year. So, looking forward to the current year of our practical vision, we have identified 50 projects this year that are in our operational plan, which is a combination of our core work and of the practical vision. Interesting, one of our projects this year will be to try and figure out how we're going to update the practical vision 2020. So I know some of you may be involved with that effort as well. So one of your attachments in the agenda package is this spreadsheet, which is simply a list of the numerous projects we have and estimated hours necessary to accomplish these tasks. We have dedicated about 100 pages of work to our operational plan, and these are just a highlight of some of those issues. So before I take questions, let me hit a few of the highlights of our priorities for the coming year. So for Chapter 1 of our practical vision, we will continue to work on our basin plan amendment to adopt biological objectives for perennial streams. We hope the documents are soon to go out for peer review. We've had a little bit of a snafu there, but we're trying to work through that. This board held a workshop last February on this item, and we anticipate a staff public workshop, hopefully in April. After responding to peer review comments and public comments, we anticipate bringing this item before you in October of this year. We also continue to implement the strategy for a healthy San Diego Bay by forming a unified monitoring assessment program. And later this summer, you will hear an update on the state of the bay. And that's kind of an annual item that we're doing, and we'll be focusing in on some of the key uses. In addition, addition, as we continue to shift from programmatic perspectives to water quality outcomes and setting our priorities, we have formed internally a priority setting team. This allows us to coordinate our practical vision work and our core compliance work through our key uses. And those key uses are safe to eat, healthy water, safe to swim, healthy ecosystems, and drinking water supply. It's through the lens of those four key uses that we will try and focus our efforts both through the practical vision and through our core programmatic responsibilities. So in implementing chapter two of our practical vision, we just heard a little bit about modern monitoring. Thank you, Sarah. And we will also continue to implement plume tracking at our ocean outfalls from our POTWs. The photo on the right here shows some of our team down in the San Diego River. And we've adopted a site down there where we do monthly monitoring to look at basic physical parameters and try and figure out what's going on with the city's restoration efforts as well. So kind of tracking what the city's doing. This gives our staff an opportunity to not only see the real world of what restoration looks like, but to get out there and understand what they're protecting in a very real sense of getting in the water and touching water and analyzing that water. Finally, in Chapter 2, we are evaluating our efforts to realize water quality improvements through TMDL alternatives. And these show up in the water quality improvement plans of the co-permittees. And initially, our efforts are focused on Loma Alta Slough, up in Oceanside, Formosa Slough down along the San Diego River, and also the San Diego River estuary, which you'll hear more about next month. I'm sorry, the Santa Margarita River estuary, which you'll hear about next month, not the San Diego River. Chapter three of our practical vision has definitely been the most challenging as we try and realize net gain wetland areas. To achieve this, the board adopted a resolution in 2015, which calls out three projects that we should be working on to try and advance. So the first project was the Brown property, which is an infill project right in the middle of the Tijuana estuary. And that project has received about $1.3 million in California Department of Fish and Wildlife funds and another $30,000 by the County of San Diego. So we hope to be moving towards reclaiming that property and moving that big flood the hydrology in the estuary. The second project was Rewild Mission Bay, and this is a conceptual wetlands project along the northern and eastern edge of Mission Bay, and right now it's still in a conceptual stage, and there hasn't been a lot of progress just yet. And finally, the third project was tracking improvement in the San Juan and San Trabuco and Trabuco Creek areas, and unfortunately we don't have much report on those areas right now, but we are still trying to track it as best we can. Chapter 4 deals with public outreach. The executive officer is now preparing an outreach plan for 2019 that will focus on environmental justice and disadvantaged communities. They'll be meeting with the board chair to discuss that plan shortly. We are implementing, as I mentioned, our climate change readiness projects, and we continue to improve our tools, such as our website and social media, to solicit input from the public order to help them participate more meaningful in our work. As the slide on the top right points out, that was our Earth Day Fair 2 years ago. We are planning to participate again in 2019. The date is April 28th in Balboa Park, and we'd love to have you guys participate. So, in particular, I think we're still looking for somebody to wear the Wayne Drop costume. Okay, just not all you at once. Gary smiling, puts you down for the costume.
Pardon me, but if four board members show up and one wears the costume, does that count as a quorum?
Yes.
Yes.
So there's no benefit to wearing a costume, as far as I can tell.
You need a better costume than disguising.
Thank you.
Chapter 5, we hope we'll see significant progress in 2019, as this board will consider MPDS permits for the Poseidon desalination facility, the South Coast Coast Doheny Desalination Facility and the Pure Water Project for the City of San Diego at Miramar Reservoir. In addition, we're continuing to work with Padre Dam and the Helix Water District and the City of San Diego to help develop their indirect potable reuse projects. As I mentioned, included in the operational plan are 50 projects, some of them multi-year. We are dedicating 47 of our 65 PYs through this effort. And as I mentioned also, the practical vision is not separate from our core work. We like to think of it as, and I'll use Dave's term, a force multiplier here, as the two really are working together to improve water quality. I do want to mention two core program work projects that you will hopefully hear about in this current calendar year. TMDL is for the Tijuana River Valley to deal with waste and trash issues, human waste and trash issues, and the reissuance of the regional stormwater permit. Now, the TMDLs will be under development this year, and there could be a workshop or an update late in the calendar year. But the permit, the regional stormwater permit, should arrive on the agenda before the year is over. So, as I briefly described some of our work here, it accounts for about 70% of our effort. There's, of course, a lot more that's not included, including extensive public record access request responses, basin planning efforts like our Choice Creek Water Effects Ratio, which this board approved probably over a year ago now, which is still waiting for consideration up at the state board. And there's also the kind of core work of inspections, responding to complaints, initiating and responding to litigation, and of course, my favorite, enforcement. So the team and I are prepared to answer any questions you may have. I thank you for the opportunity to update you on our priorities for the year, and I do recommend adoption of Resolution R9-0-2019-0023.
Well, I wanted to say I'm glad to see some projects in South Orange County, or some foci in South Orange County. Also wanted to ask another question. It may be a bit tangential, and that has to do with the number of sewer overflows that I saw in the executive report. I wondered, is this one of our normal objectives to see to that? I realize we have a finding process, but I also realize that this year, I believe San Diego County assigned someone to the region board who's paid special attention to storm water washes and making sure they were clear. Maybe I'm not exactly saying it appropriately.
So the county does have a responsibility as a co-owner. Maintain their stormwater system. And hopefully they have more than one person working on that. Sanitary sewer overflows continue to be a problem for this region. While we've come a long way in probably the last 30 years, you still see that we have raw sewage reaching surface waters on a monthly basis, not only from the Tijuana River Valley, but from breaks throughout the system in our region. There's a couple efforts going on to address that. As you mentioned, enforcement. In times past, 50,000 gallons reaching surface waters was somewhat of a threshold in which we would pursue enforcement after a volume of that size was spilled. But we're kind of pivoting a little bit now towards looking at the key areas of our uses. The executive officer's report this month does mention a case that's out there for public review right now involving a settlement with the city of Del Mar. And this was a rather small spill, about 4,500 gallons, but it went directly to a high-use beach on a weekend. So we felt, because of the key use impact, we are addressing that very directly with a fine towards them. And then secondly, we have what we hope the board will hear soon is an investigative order to deal with human waste issues in the San Diego River Valley watershed. There's several efforts by the co-permittees already underway to try and address the numerous sources of human waste. And one of them could be these frequent but low-volume spills that are coming from the collection system. So we're not quite sure how bad of a problem that is just yet.
So I thought these Perhaps I misunderstood the report, but I thought the report was talking about ones related to a storm, of which more than 50% overflowed.
We do report the storm volume along with the spills, because the storm volume and rain size can often convey those spills beyond the area of initial footprint.
Sure.
Sometimes it may be captured on site at the treatment plant itself, but if we do have large storm volumes, it will make it all the way to the ocean.
Well, my concern is that there were such a large number of them. I mean, I'm wondering if, so as this study goes forward, does it mean that active maintenance of the sewer lines is going to be, are we going to be learning that? Because in certain areas, there is active looking at the sewers and making sure that you're not going to have these storm overflows. I know it can come from infiltration, a lot of different sources. And some areas have sealed the sewers. It seems like this was an inordinate number to me.
Unfortunately, it wasn't necessarily much higher than we've seen throughout the year. And as we do get more information, we may have to reevaluate our efforts on compliance with the waste discharge requirements are both statewide and local on the sewage collection system. And our regional permit does not allow any discharge of sewage upstream of a treatment plant. And again, they've come a long way, but perhaps we have a long way still to go to realize that strict prohibition. Once we get more information, we can report back.
I have a comment and two questions. I don't think it's appropriate to list the fines in the accomplishments. I think I said this last year. I understand that there's a tremendous amount of work and effort that goes into tracking down an enforcement violation and seeing the process through, but we have to find a different way to capture it in our data and reporting out, in my opinion, which just doesn't strike me as an accomplishment. Rather, if we had none, that would be an accomplishment and something to work towards. And then just two questions. And then I'll take my answer off the air. For the Public Records Act request, if you could just identify maybe the top three or four reasons we're getting the Public Records Act request, or the topics that are addressed in the Public Records Act request. And then my second question is, do we know the reason behind the holdup with the North Mission Bay wetland plan? Or, and I guess corollary to that, is there anything we can do to facilitate that conversation?
Well, point taken on fines and enforcement. We understand that that is sometimes the default fallback to achieving some kind of environmental outcome that we want to see. And a lot of times that money can come back to the region in the form of supplemental environmental projects or even through the cleanup and abatement fund. So it can be useful. But you're absolutely right. We want to see no fines, we want to see no spills, and compliance is what we're after. And we struggle with that probably on a monthly basis as we meet as a compliance oversight group. How do we effectively get to compliance if we're just finding the same entities over and over again? It seems useless. I might defer to Catherine on the PRA request, and I'll come back to your last question.
So the board, I think, gets a lot of really routine Public Records Act requests where they're not even called requests. They're just file reviews where someone wants to come in and make a copy or get copies of everything relating to a particular address. And those are, I think, Lucas, the coordinator, handles those without the need for legal review, and that's pretty basic. But the ones that take a lot of our time, especially recently, are primarily generated from insurance companies and third-party litigation, where they want every record that we have concerning every certain aspects of the San Diego Bay, and they want it back for decades, and they have unlimited budgets to pay for that kind of work. And so that's very time consuming. And then as far as work, additional records requests that can be time consuming that come periodically are from generally from law firms related to actions that the board is taking, and they may be wanting to find out information about other similar types of, if we have any similar types of actions where maybe there were different processes provided. So that involves a comprehensive search of all the different program areas, and everyone has to find, look at their files and their schedules and officers, and that involves a lot of legal review as well for privilege and other responsiveness requirements.
Thank you, Catherine. In regards to Rewild Mission Bay, it really comes down to a land use issue, and it's very expensive property on the northern edge of the bay there, and with competing interests in either development, and hotel proposals going forward.
We're talking about where campland is, right?
Yes.
So we're also getting this.
As well as wetland restoration. As far as how the board can help, your influence, I think, is invaluable in talking to your colleagues about the importance of wetlands along Mission Bay. And then who knows, if we get a big storm surge and some flooding, the environment may dictate the outcome for us.
Well, then, at the risk of it being a late addition, perhaps that's something we can add to a future agenda item. We can either, I guess, asking folks to come in and talk to us about the status of the work there, or if we can host an event for an hour or two to bring everyone in and talk, and we can bang our fists on the importance of wetland recovery.
We can look into that and check with legal counsel about the appropriateness of that. We have suggested it to a few folks through as a supplemental environmental project. But yes, as an informational item, I think we're safe to bear.
I'm sorry to interrupt, because you have another question to be answered. Is this initially a City of San Diego land use decision?
Yes.
So what we can do, those of us who don't live in the city of San Diego can do less, but those of you who do can do more. Okay.
Sorry, that was a close question, right? Okay,
good.
I didn't want to cut out a term, but we seem to be going this direction. So
we're bi-directional.
A real quick one. The boat channel, you mentioned that it was complicated, I guess. Were there technical or mechanical issues with that, or was it just politics, and is there a growing problem between us and my Navy?
I definitely don't think it's a growing problem. The team, thanks to Gita's help, was able to work through some of the cleanup issues and what was the appropriate level for cleanup, which is the typical problem throughout all of our sediment cleanups in San Diego Bay. But they were able to work. There was some give and take on both sides, and I think it resulted in good cleanup.
The operational plan is unique to San Diego, and that's very interesting and intriguing to me, particularly the multiplier force, or force multiplier impact. So, but I'm curious, you must have done a lot of review, perhaps there's a matrix of how the operational plan implements or relates to basin plans and the other kind of traditional plans that guide a regional board's activities. I'm curious as to how those intersect.
Well, we're kind of making it up as we go to a certain extent, and you're right, that is unique to our board. Initially, we did get a little pro bono outside help in trying to draft our second operational plan. And what we're looking are for those drivers, those force multipliers that help realize our various values that we have within our practical vision, and also the water quality outcomes that we're seeking. So the intersection between those is really the items that we want to put forth and promote. But we haven't done a retrospective, if you will, and that's probably a good idea to consider as part of our update to the 2020 practical vision.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very good question. At the time we adopted the practical, gave consideration, I don't know if it's in writing or minutes, to the conjunction with the basin plan, because that's the formal constitution of the region. And I think since we have made changes in the basin plan last year, that doing it during this year when we review the practical vision and update it, or decide to toss it out because it's not working. We should do that again. Truth is, I don't think we've talked about the conjunction of them since
small line in the water code that finds its way into the basin plan that says the regions are to have plans that are to result in the restoration of water quality. That's about all it says. So we think our practical vision fits within that line.
Oh, so that's interesting. I think most people assume our action has always been that the plans were the basin plans.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. You're thinking of this as an alternative to, perhaps, to the basin plan or as a...
A supplement to.
Supplement. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Supplement. That's interesting. That gives me some kind of geolocation in my mind.
As I recall, another consideration was that it's difficult for members of the public, whether they're here or not, to track what we're doing through the basin plan. I seriously doubt that anyone in the room has read it thoroughly. Staff probably has, not the members of the planning board. This practical vision addresses things that are somewhat specific to the region, but also we hope some general interest, like the water, the wetlands and such. And that gave us a chance to be more public about what we're doing, in addition to all the other efforts. At least that's the way I think we thought about it. I have a question about the Doheny Desal project.
Sorry.
That's in Southern Orange County, is that,
yes.
Is that right? Do you know offhand what the capacity of that proposed plant is?
I do not, but I will look for
here's our...
I'll let you use it, Ben Neal, Water Resource Control Engineer.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. We haven't received a formal application yet for that project. The preliminary plans were $5 million with an option to expand up to 15 million gallons per day.
So that's quite small compared to Carlsbad.
That would be kind of like an opinion of someone to consider what is small in comparison, I suppose.
I was dividing
so like
five million,
and Poseidon has a capacity up to, well, their tenant border has a capacity up to 60 million gallons, and that'd be like 12%.
Okay.
Same capacity.
Is ocean intake, or is it brackish water?
The plans are subsurface intakes, and I need to clarify that subsurface doesn't mean below the water surface. It means below the sea floor in the sediments. So it's that kind of subsurface intake.
I believe that they are still looking at slant wells, which are below the surface, embedded in the sand.
Right. Below the seafloor surface, not the water surface. Yeah.
Okay. We'll hear about the details when they have the details.
Yeah, we're expecting an application this week.
Oh. See you next month.
Okay.
Just a quick question. Poseidon is permitted for quite a bit. What are they operating at, do you know? Can I ask that?
The current permit is... So we deal with more of like the discharge flow and not the drinking water production. Were you thinking of what is their drinking water production? It's the current contract is average 50 million gallons a day to County Water Authority. And with the new NPDES permit, they requested an increase up to 60 MGD per day.
Okay, thanks.
That's it?
Okay, thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you.
All right, the last item on the agenda. We have to, we have a resolution before us. So persuasive, I just assumed that it passed. So we have vote on the resolution number R9, 2019-0023.
I need a motion and a second.
Yeah.
we approve tentative resolution R92019-0023.
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Cantu?
Aye.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Ms. Warren?
Aye.
Dr. Barbanel?
Aye. Thank you. Okay, now we can go back and complete the agenda. The last item on the public agenda before we go into closed session, the election of a regional board chair and vice chair.
With his concurrence, I'll move that Henry be our chairman for this year.
I should point out that if I'm not reappointed by the governor, I will not be the chairman of the year.
Second.
Mr. Anderson?
Aye.
Ms. Cantu?
Aye.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Ms. Warren?
Aye.
Dr. Barbanel?
Yes. I would like to take the opportunity to ask whether Celeste would serve as vice chair. I discussed it with her. Unless she changed her mind, she seemed willing.
I'd be honored.
Mr. Anderson?
With hearty thanks for serving.
Ms. Cantu?
Aye.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Mr. Strawn?
Aye.
Ms. Warren?
Aye.
Dr. Barbanel?
Aye. Okay, do you want to take us into closed session, please?
Yes, we will be talking about item 8J and item 8O.
Thank you very much. Somebody will come back and report whatever we're supposed to report.
Chris, it's on?
Hey, Jimmy, I can't find mine. If you guys do send someone out,
I think it's a jerk.
For the same for every task force, I would do it.
Okay, meeting's adjourned.